Ladies and gentlemen, now boarding for Latitude, the travel photography podcast on the Improve Photography Network. And now your hosts, Brian McGuckin and Brent Bergherm.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Latitude, the travel photography podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Brian McGuckin, and with me is...
Brent Bergherm. Thank you. And we've got a guest today.
We do. Hey, we do. You may be familiar with him a little bit, especially if you just heard that little creepy, hey, guys. That is Connor, one of the hosts from Portrait Sessions. And you may be confused, wondering, well, why is a host of Portrait Sessions on a travel photography podcast? And so Connor reached out to us about something really cool that he has coming up that does deal with portraits and it does deal with travel. So we thought it would be a great time to have him join us. So Connor, welcome to your first official episode with us of Latitude. Thanks for joining us.
This is really great. I really appreciate the box of confetti that you shipped me, and I've been scattering it around my house all day just with excitement.
Awesome. Good.
And your wife's following behind with a vacuum trying to suck it up, right? Saying, stop,
oh man,
stop
it. We have a Roomba. It's great. It just follows around in circles. I don't have to worry about it at all. I can just make whatever mess I want.
Nice. Very good. Yeah. So Connor, tell us. Okay. So you contacted us because you wanted to share about a cool thing that's coming up for you guys, for you and Sandy. Yeah. So share with us about it.
Yeah. So for anybody that doesn't know, Sandy and I have been, well, we're hosting some workshops throughout the year. And thanks to the Improved Photography Retreat, we made some friends that live in Denmark and Sweden. So through the conversations of just like, oh man, it would be really cool to go out there sometime. And their encouragement of, no, you really need to come out here. We've decided that we are going to be holding a workshop in Sweden. So it's going to be a workshop. We have two different weekends. One of them is going to be 2 days of portfolio shooting. So we'll have models and travel around to different locations and just kind of work with people on lighting and shooting portraits in the environment that's around us. And then the first weekend that we're doing is going to be all based on lighting for portraiture, probably consisting a lot of outdoor portraiture, although I'm probably going to start moving into doing some multi-light setups because 2 days gives me a lot of time to cover a lot of material there. It just seemed like a pretty fitting topic to talk about with you guys because this is something that I have never really done before to the extent that I'm doing it. I have never tried to book photo sessions and book models and location scout for a location that is halfway around the world. And it's become a very interesting project so far, getting the basics together to be able to actually pull this off.
That sounds like a big challenge. Sorry, Brian, go ahead.
I just was going to say, so that's why we thought this would be a great episode to just talk about, because a lot of times there are a lot of photographers out there that do love to travel and don't necessarily just want to do landscape. They want to do portraits in these amazing areas. And so you're not just bringing people with you. You've been working on, where are we going to do this? You know, how do we plan out for that? How are we going to find models? And so I think this is going to be great because I'm sure there's a lot of listeners that want to do that as well. So share with us just, like, how's the planning going? How are you figuring out all this information?
So the first bit of advice that I might have for anybody is don't be afraid to seem like a little bit of a weirdo at first, especially crossing cultural bounds. It's a little bit nerve-wracking when you're talking to somebody that English is probably their second language. But I've actually just been searching through Instagram, strangely enough, and searching for hashtags that have to do with the city that I'm going to be teaching in and just looking around for people that seem like they might be suitable models. Or I'll find people in there that have interesting photos and I'll go and look at all of their followers. So it's doing a lot of digging. Maybe I should look into Model Mayhem. Something like that might have people around the world, but I don't know if that's really just an American thing or if that's a worldly thing. So my technique so far has just been kind of digging around both for locations and for people through Instagram, looking in the cities that I'm going to be in. And then once I find somebody that seems interesting, I'll kind of look and see if are they interacting at all in English or is everything that they're doing in Swedish. And it's a different way of going about it. It's not me going and talking to an agency. It's a lot of, oh, this person has unique features. Maybe they'd be willing to come and stand in front of a bunch of people for some photos. It helps to have a contact in that country, though. So one thing that I have had is my friend in Sweden who is able to actually kind of direct me in a few different areas. So making a single contact anywhere is really useful for being able to maybe ask them questions and ask their direction elsewhere. Did that sentence make sense?
It does.
I think it did.
I'm curious when you talk about search on Instagram, like I've never really thought of using Instagram as a search tool like that. So
how
are you searching with the hashtags for these? Like, so just share with us how you're doing that.
When I first started out, I was like, Sweden's not a big place, right? I can just search Sweden. And then very quickly I went, oh, that was dumb. So I started looking more specifically in the city that we're going to be in, and around the area. So where we're going to be teaching is in Helsingborg. I don't know the proper way to pronounce it. I'm sorry, anybody that might be listening out in that area, but that's about an hour outside of Copenhagen. So I'm doing a lot of searching in Copenhagen and then just seeing other posts that are around there and using Copenhagen as kind of my base search. So I'll just search Copenhagen, Copenhagen model, just different tags that have to do with the things that I am looking for and finding people through that.
How many different locations are you looking at taking people for these setups? You mentioned these two cities. Are there other cities or are there locations within the cities that you're thinking about?
We're mainly just looking at locations within the city. So, okay. I mean, the drive even an hour away for a portrait-based workshop is, it's not too far, but it's on the farther end. So I'm looking for about five locations just in and around the city that we're going to be in. So one that particularly sticks out, there's this beautiful, it's like a resort, but it's very old English construction, very prissy, preppy, like fancy looking place that I've gotten into contact with. And hopefully we're able to work out a location there. But then there's also a castle nearby. So there's some things that you can find pretty easily just looking at Instagram and you go, oh, okay, there's a lot of pictures of this castle. It must be open to the public. Where can I go to find out more information about that? And, you know, then it has a name usually associated with it and you can look up the name and find all these different locations that way.
And when you're looking at the style of photos you're going to shoot, is it going to be just your common portrait? Are you going to have two models in one? Is it going to be a wedding type shoot? What are you looking for there?
I am kind of just looking to do portraits that look believably like something that you would be hired for. So I'm not looking for high fashion models necessarily, but I'm also not looking at doing like a staged wedding. I just want to get a few people of different varieties of looks that could be believable as an actual client. Because one of the key things with this is that I want people to walk away with portfolio pieces that look like they were things that they actually shot, not just to get the shots, but because they were hired to do them.
Well, that's a good way to look at it. But you're going to be putting them in front of these castles and all whatnot. So yeah. It's going to be just an amazing setup.
Yeah, totally.
Awesome.
A setup that will feature some of the natural charm of the city that we're going to be in. It's pretty close to not so much a city. Like it's a smaller city, so you're able to get outside of it pretty easily and maybe do something in nature and do something that's a little more city, something in a castle. Yeah.
Awesome.
So here's a question I have for you. I totally understand, you know, just the appeal to people that kind of live in that area.
Yeah.
But why would somebody from the US want to attend this workshop with you? I mean, I know why I would, but for your listeners or for people that you are kind of the type of people that you think would attend this workshop, explain the benefits of that for them.
Well, the benefits for the first one anyway is going to be that it's going to be very hands-on education. We're very limited in the number of seats that we have for this workshop. So we have a maximum of 10 seats and three of them have already been taken. Everything that we're going to be teaching is like from beginner all the way up through pretty advanced flash techniques using flash on location and as it applies to shooting in a studio or anywhere else you might want to use. So the information is going to be useful on its own. And then as far as an American, why they might want to go, a tax write-off trip to Sweden, because it's educational. It's not just necessarily for travel photography that, you know, sometimes you can write things off and sometimes you can't. It's strictly educational trip that you happen to have a week in between both workshops. If you decide to attend both, that you can, I don't know, explore around
Copenhagen or anything like that.
Yeah, totally. Sure. So realistically, we put this together with targeting Swedes and Danish people in mind initially. But then the more I thought about it, the more I was like, you know what? If I had this opportunity, I would quite possibly take that person up on it because it's not a free trip, but it's a trip that you can write off as a business expense. And that's encouraging to me anyway.
Another cool thing about this, just as an attendee, is, and I almost feel that this is true about most workshops when you're traveling to another country, is you're with a lot of like-minded people, and you meet new photographers and new friends who love to travel as well, and tends to be laid back and enjoyable for the most part. You know, there may always be one person out there who just is kind of stuck in their ways and want things done their way. But for the most part, it's always a blast and it's a good time. And, you know, to travel over there to an area where I don't know if many people, when they do travel, tend to go to that area, you know, Norway, Sweden, Finland. And so I think it's a great opportunity. So I think it definitely would be a blast. Where can people find out the details for this trip, for this workshop?
If they go to our website, it's esteemcommercial.com. So E-S-T-E-E-M commercial.com/workshops. Down at the, I think it's the last two links on the page are our two Sweden workshops right now. And feel free to, if you don't want to travel all the way to Sweden and you'd rather travel to Colorado, I have some stuff there too, but that's not what this is about.
Well, that's still travel. You know, not everyone lives in Colorado.
You bet.
Yeah,
Some of us live in the middle of flat Indiana, and we don't have mountains the way you do, even though you don't bother to go out there to shoot them.
Nope, I do not. I've been having a lot of that conversation with people recently that I live in Colorado, and I don't really care for nature photography.
Oh, that's painful to hear. No, just giving you a hard time.
No, realistically, it's a gorgeous state to live in. But it's one of those situations of I've lived here my whole life and I don't know, the beauty has worn off a bit.
Your Sweden workshops are happening in August. Is that right?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay. So there's another resource for finding out about improved photography workshops at large, and that is improvephotography.com/workshops. And I know you've got your items listed there, Connor.
Yes.
I've got one listed there. I have a free meetup that I'm doing in Miami that listeners may want to be involved in as well. We can talk a little more about that a little bit later, but just heading onto that website, it's kind of a collection of all the folks that are running workshops. Improvephotography.com/workshops will get you an updated list of those kinds of items as well.
The topic that I wanted to talk about today, I think, Connor, this could be helpful with some feedback as far as for your trip, is the bad weather. We are getting so much rain here in Indiana right now. Rivers have overflowed to where streets are closing down. A handful of my neighbors have water in their basement, inches of it. I have it seeping through a little bit, but for the most part, not a big issue. And so it reminded me of my first time to Europe. On my first trip to Europe, I landed in Munich, Germany, and I had things planned out to where I don't joke around. I go, I'm there for a couple of days, then on to the next place, then the next, then the next. So I had 3 days in Munich, and then from there, I was going to Austria and was only going to be there for like 48 hours. From there, I was heading over to Budapest, and then from there up to Poland. And in that trip, when I got in Munich, it was raining. It was pouring for all 3 days that I was there. And then I took a train ride from there to Austria, and it was raining in Austria, and the river that was overflowing, and the weather was horrible. I think, you know, what's unfortunate is as travel photographers, that's almost like one of our biggest fears is what if we get to the location and the weather is horrible? What are you going to do? And Brent, have you ever had that experience in your travels?
You betcha. my first time to Croatia, whether or not I go out on the coast, whether I just about anywhere, you're going to be dealing with some kind of weather. Certainly weather can make for some really awesome pictures. Even just last night, I went out and shot some lightning. I finished recording the IP podcast, and I was able to then just put the boys to bed and head out and shoot some lightning. But, you know, that can be awesome, or it can also potentially ruin your trip. One thing that I ended up doing one time, I saw what I thought was the writing on the wall, and I actually bailed on this little island in the Adriatic Sea that I was on because I had rented a moped and this torrential rain had come up, and I was just like, oh, I'm leaving. And so took my moped back, checked out of my room early. I didn't worry about the money that I was losing out on that because I just, you know, it was a lost cause. I'm waiting for the ferry. In that time frame, it was only about an hour and a half or so. Clouds split, sun came out. I was just like, oh, this stinks. I should not have done that.
And that's exactly one of my points is like sticking it out, you know, staying there. When we were in China, there was a whole group of us. We took, I think it was like an hour and a half bus ride early in the morning to get there before, to climb up to the top of the karst mountain type thingies. before the sun was rising. And so, and it's just pouring like crazy. And we get there and half the group is like, hey, this just is horrible. It's not going to work. And so Jim decided that he would go back with the group and do portfolio reviews. And Nick and I and the rest of the group that was there, we decided, hey, we're going up. And yeah. So we climbed up it in the downpour and to where the, I'm sure everyone's heard these stories already, but the steps look like a waterfall because of all the water coming down. And we get up there and it's just pouring like crazy. When we got up there, it stopped. We got this amazing sky and the best panorama shot that I've ever taken is from there. And it's because we had horrible weather and we stuck it out. And had we not had the bad weather, the sky would not have been as amazing as it was, you know, but that doesn't always happen.
Right.
The sky doesn't always open up the way that we want it to.
And
so, it's still worth sitting around and waiting for those moments because I mean, what's the worst that's going to happen? You're going to get a little bit wet and then you're going to go back home and go, oh man, that stinks. Your story actually kind of reminded me of the first day that I was on my honeymoon. In Maui, Hawaii. It was kind of rainy and it wasn't nice. And we got to our hotel and I was like, yeah, like, let's just go try and see sunset. Cause there were a bunch of clouds in the sky and I just had high hopes. So I brought my camera out because, you know, I'm a really good brand new husband who's willing to leave my wife on the beach and go take photos.
There you go.
And yeah, she was close enough by, but I went and found some cool rocks that I set up on and I was sitting there watching the sunset and it just, nothing was going to happen. I could see a cloud off in the distance that was just blocking the sun. So all of these clouds were in the sky and it was just falling flat. And there was this guy that was next to me who had actually traveled from China. He was there and he had his tripod up and he was taking some photos. And the second that the sky was below the horizon, he left. And I sat there and I just kept on shooting because I was like, yeah, you know, like there's at least some nice cloud cover here. And sure enough, about 5 minutes later, the sky blew up with this like bright pink color. It was gorgeous. And sure enough, this guy is running back and I'm in his old spot that was definitely the better spot to be in. And he comes running back and setting up his tripod, trying to capture it. And very hurriedly, I think he got something. It seemed like he got something, but he also didn't seem too keen on trying to talk to the loud American that I am.
You sound a little bit like me in Jamaica. I kind of left my wife a little bit too when we were on honeymoon.
Yeah, sometimes doing that just a little bit, like she had a book, she was happy with it. We went back and had our honeymoon later and I got a pretty cool shot in Hawaii.
Awesome.
So yeah, waiting it out is definitely worthwhile because realistically, had I done the same thing that he did and if I had left, I would have missed that shot. And it's one of my favorites from that trip.
But you know what? When we wait it out, though, it doesn't always end up the way we want.
Yeah,
so, right. So what do you do then? You know, and I think a lot of the trips that I've gone on when I did some work for a travel company a few summers ago was they sent me to south of the equator, to South America, Brazil, and Central America, and specifically the beaches. And so summer for us down there, you know, that's their winter, which is a very wet, rainy season. So I had the challenge of, you know, I knew ahead of time, okay, this is the season I'm going into because you should be prepared and you should study the seasons where when you're going, what is the weather going to be like, you know, bringing whatever you need. But you still have to realize, okay, I've got to do the best I can with what I have.
Right.
And so that's going to cause you to, you know, to have to be a little creative. You know, if you're walking through doing some street photography, you know, you can get some really cool shots in the rain that you could not get if it was sunny and beautiful skies, you know? So, you know, whether you're hanging out underneath an overhang, you know, and getting where the water is dripping down and maybe you're focusing on the water and the background, you know, is showing this cool blur or something with it, or looking for one of my favorite bad weather shots I have is in Budapest, Hungary. It was a picture of the monument to the revolution, the 1956 revolution against Russia. And there's this huge puddle on the ground. And so I got my camera and my lens down on the ground right next to it. And it was sprinkling a little bit, but I've got the monument in the background and then the reflection right there up in my lens. And the cool part about it is it was still sprinkling. And so the raindrops was making these little like ripples in the water. And so, you know, you can't sit there and think, I've got bad weather, my trip is ruined, because I don't know if I'm going to be going out to Budapest, Hungary again anytime soon. So you've got to do the best you can with what you have, you know, whether it's hiding out in an area, but still shooting, looking for reflections, carrying your umbrella around with you if you have to. you know, going in, getting a drink of coffee and staying warm and paying attention to find out, hey, you know, what's the weather like? Is there going to be a break in the weather to where then you have to go out and take advantage of that? But you've got to be ready, and you've got to look at that and be like, okay, I've got to still get what I can while I'm here because I may not be able to come back here.
That's right. Yeah. I've got a great example of that that I always kick myself in the behind over because this was, although I forget myself a little bit because this was a long time ago when I was a little bit newer in photography than I am now, but I was in Hong Kong and had the same thing. It was just raining. I was up at the Peak Tower, which overlooks Victoria Harbor. And so I wanted the clouds and the rain falling down with all of those beautiful lights and reflections happening in the water and all the lights in the buildings, you know, that's just so much neon lights. And it was just gorgeous. I was like, oh, this is so awesome. But right where I wanted to stand, there was a couple just nuzzling each other and just they had their nice little umbrella and they were just, you know, cooing at each other and everything. I literally stood there about 6 feet away from them. I kid you not, for 30 minutes waiting for them to move because I did not want to lose my spot. I wanted that shot. And then it finally dawned on me, like, Brent, you're so stupid. This is the shot. And so I framed it up and got them with the umbrella framing in the city, them off to the side. Beautiful composition. Tripped off the shutter a couple of times. Probably in like 2 minutes, they were done. And I was like, oh, I'm so glad I got that shot. I wasn't, you know, just so driven to get the shot that I thought I wanted, but being open and flexible, absolutely. It's a good thing.
So yeah. Connor, that leads to my question then for you, with your workshop that you have coming up. If you're in Sweden and the weather's bad, you know, what's your plan?
What my plan do? Is to talk with everybody and explain to them that there are ways to make good photos in any kind of weather. My big thing is bad weather during the summertime. That usually means rain. And when there's rain, there's usually a lot of drama that's happening around it. Because water makes everything reflect. So you can do lots of really cool stuff by, you know, taking shots in puddles. I can think of a session that I did last year where it's not a far drive, but I traveled about an hour and 20 minutes up to Denver to photograph this young girl for her senior portraits, and it was pouring. And we happened to hide out in an IKEA parking lot trying to let the water or let the rain die down. And then I kind of discovered, like, you know what? All these cars driving in here are pulling a lot of water in and there's tons of puddles everywhere. So let's start doing some stuff with reflections in this IKEA parking lot. And sure enough, her senior photo is a portrait of her taken at IKEA.
Which also happens to be Swedish.
Which happens to be Swedish.
There's a theme to where your workshop's going to be. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, when we're talking about going to a castle, I mean, there's a part of me that almost hopes for a little bit of rain here or there because you can create such interesting portraits that you don't get otherwise. If it's a nice, beautiful, sunny day, that's a different kind of thing that you're having to fight against to get your shots. You're dealing with harsh sunlights. Mm-hmm. So my feelings in anything that I'm doing shooting is that I persevere through the work, or I do the work to get the good photo, whether I'm dealt a beautiful sunny day or a rainy day. And that's going to be the attitude that I take at this workshop.
So what else do you have for us in bad weather, Brian?
To me, it comes down to you have to take advantage of the opportunities and just have a positive attitude about it.
Yes.
You know, carpe diem, you know, you have a chance to get a photograph that most people don't get. The average tourist goes there. They're out with their cameras on these beautiful, sunny, great, perfect weather days, getting pictures, but they're not going to get the pictures that you are if you're out there shooting still in this bad weather,
whether it's
rain or snow or thunderstorms or whatever. So to me, I'm the type where I'm like, if I'm going to spend this much money to get to that country, nothing's going to keep me from still taking photos. It may not be the photos I had, you know, created in my head originally, but I'm still going to come back with something. And even if that means that I have to buy, you know, certain gear or buy some garbage bags to cover up myself or cover up my camera. In the end, if you can afford to go on these trips to be there in the first place, you can afford to buy yourself some plastic bags to cover
totally.
Up your gear.
And if you can't, and if you're staying at a hotel that has a shower cap, grab that. It'll at least partially cover your camera.
Or your hair. You can put it on your head too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Keep your hair looking nice when you go inside a cafe or something.
I virtually have no hair, so it doesn't matter for me.
Or got your hat. You have your rain hat all the time.
That's awesome. Yeah, good. It works really well.
But one Brian last needs thing. To really consider his hair because look at that hair.
I know.
People can't see this. We don't shoot video. Oh, the hair on top of my head.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
If you've ever seen a picture of Brian McGuckin, he has a lush, full head of hair.
Yeah, what? I know. So does Nick Page. It's just it's on the bottom part of his head, you know, on his chin, which I'm jealous of. So
pulling us back. one last thing that I would say that I kind of kick myself over on this topic of bad weather is not listening to the locals. I mentioned I had rented a moped on that Adriatic island. And when I was returning it, I had asked, you know, well, can I have the half day rate instead of the full day rate? Because, you know, I'm returning it early. And the gal was like, oh, sure. She's like, what, you're turning it in already? I was like, well, it's raining. How long will it last? And she shrugs her shoulders and is like, 20 minutes. And it just didn't register that, you know, if I could just be patient, I could still continue my shoot on this nice little island. So if you have the opportunity to communicate with the locals, they probably know better than you what's going to happen. And go ahead and listen to what they're saying if you need a break. Because it was a torrential downpour and it was hard to consider what I could get. But man, afterwards, I bet I could have gotten all those types of things you're saying, reflections and whatnot. Would have been nice to have been patient.
And that, you know what, that should have been number one in my list, because that is the main thing that's been helpful for me with my trips, and especially for us with China, because our amazing guides that we had there, they were the Guilin photography tours. They were the ones that said, hey, you know, we should still go because the weather here changes quickly and it can get better up there and it's probably going to end up being great. And they were completely, totally right.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, you know, go in a cafe or ask the people at your hotel, find out, you know, from the locals, what is the weather like? Now, I believe down in Florida, in the Tampa area, it rains every day for like 20 minutes, right? And then it's gone or something like that. So you know, asking your locals, that's a definite.
All right. Our next topic, and that is dealing with customs and taking your gear. And Connor, it's kind of just providential, I guess, that you happen to be on this one, because you might need to deal with this. I don't know how much gear you're planning on taking over seas with you. But
I had a ludicrous amount.
Yeah. So you definitely want to do this. I had a problem a couple of years ago when I was coming back from the Dominican Republic, and I had a boatload of gear with me. The officers at the customs desk there in New York, because I was flying through New York City, they just kind of looked at it and they kept looking and, you know, lens after lens after lens, whatnot. Long story short, they ended up saying, well, where's your documentation on all this? And I was like, well, what do you mean? And they said, well, I assume you have such and such forms, whatever, whatever. And I was like, I have no idea what you're talking about. It's all my gear. And well, how do we know you didn't buy it over? And I was like, are you kidding me? It's not like this is Hong Kong or Japan where there's a camera store like there's a Starbucks. So I kind of talked with him a little bit. He finally let me go. But that got me thinking. And then in our Facebook group, Catherine Johnson actually posed a question similar to this. So it got me thinking, might as well cover it here. So I did a little research and found out what you need to do to actually register your gear, register your equipment before you head overseas, so that when you do come back and you have all that gear with you, it's very easy. They just look at the form, they check out the serial numbers, and they just let you go. Because of that process, they delayed me. I actually ended up missing my connecting flight. And that wasn't cool. So what you got to do is look on a website. You do a search for yourself. Customs and Border Protection is what the office is called, or the organization is called. And you need a form. And in our show notes, I've got a link actually to that form. But it's the CBP form 4457. If you just do a search for that, you'll probably find it, or look up our show notes. They give you some links on that website about where to go to have this all filled out. And I looked at it and was like, well, that's no good for me, because I fly through Seattle Airport whenever I fly out and they're not telling me where it is. So I just ended up looking up the office, called the office at the SeaTac Airport and said, you know, what do I got to do for this? And the guy was very nice and he was like, oh, yeah, you just bring it to our office and we'll check it out. We'll put our stamp on it and you're good to go. It takes, you know, 5 minutes. So it's a very simple process, but on the way back, it can really solve a lot of headache when you're coming back. And I wish I could say I had, you know, some litmus test to say, you know, if you have $10,000 worth of gear, is it $20,000 worth of gear? It didn't seem that there was an exact number. It seemed to be more the quantity of gear that you had on you, not necessarily the value of the gear. So if you got a lot of stuff, get it registered. And when you come back, you hopefully won't have a problem if you don't lose your form.
I appreciate that advice entirely, because that's something I wouldn't have thought of. And I'll just see if I can talk the person into being like, yeah, write down a Hasselblad just in case I happen to find one out there.
Right. And the serial number will be, we'll leave that blank so I can fill it in.
I'll scratch it off.
There you go.
Speaking of scratching, I have a recommendation for what not to do. When I first, before I ever even traveled, I was like, well, what happens if something, you know, or somebody steals my gear, or I leave a lens or something behind, or like, how would I prove that it's mine? And so I remember, I think this must've been like 10 years ago, searching, and somebody or some site came across, that I came across, said something about putting your social security number on it and like etching it onto it, or at least the last four digits. And so I remember taking the caps off the back of my camera, and like where the plastic is, just kind of scratching the last four digits of my social security number on there. And the, you know, the pros for that are, if for some reason somehow it gets like found or something, and somebody is honest, or at some type of thrift shop or some type of place where someone's trying to sell it or whatever, you know, then that's some type of ID to be like, look, this is mine. Here's my, you know, social security number to prove that and all. However, if you do that, you absolutely lose the resale value, because then you could always come back later and be like, hey, that person has my lens. Look, there's my social security number, you know, at the end. So I would not recommend doing that. But is there anything you guys do to keep track of your gear when you're traveling?
I'll usually print off a list for myself. Basically, what I mean by that is just a little table, and I can copy in the serial numbers of the gear. So I do have a list of the gear with serial numbers on me. I actually did show the guy that form, because I'd had that with me, and he's all like, well, okay, but you could have printed this anywhere. I was like, you know, give me a break here, fella. If I had had the actual receipts on me, you know, that would have been that would have helped, I guess. I'll do that. But there's also a service called lenstag.com where you can register your gear. Looks like it's for free still. It's kind of nice because it's a database that the whole point is to clamp down on theft and the like, because you can then get back on there and report it stolen. It just requires that a lot of people know about this service. So lenstag.com, I do have some of my gear registered with them.
Yeah. Well, my advice was going to be the same thing as yours, Brent, that I have a list of serial numbers and each piece of gear that I have. And I like the idea of bringing it with me. And I was trying to think while you're talking, is there a way for you to prove that you didn't print this out in that country? And yeah, it seems to me that if you were to do the old, I don't know if it even stands up to real copyright, but mail yourself an envelope so it has the date and the stamp, and so it's sealed,
right,
of that list before you leave, then you can bring that with you and see, look, it's a sealed list,
right,
that I have all of my gear's serial numbers on.
I could see that
printed that out anywhere.
I could see that potentially working. You could also maybe get it notarized, your list notarized before you leave. If you have someone who's a notary, I happen to have someone in my office who's a notary.
But better yet, do what they do in the movies, you know, go buy a newspaper, take a picture of yourself, post the newspaper with today's date and all your gear to show, look, I got this. Here's, you know, here's the picture evidence of it.
That's right. Yeah. I love it.
Well, I've also wondered about like my camera bags, because what if somebody just grabs your bag and goes off with it? So I've thought of something, you know, similar to like a tile. You know, the tile.
I keep a tile in all of my computer bags and camera bags. I keep one in there.
You do that? Is it actually a tile, or do you use a different?
I use a tile. Camera. Yeah. There's the tracker as another one that I know of, but yeah, I use tiles because they were for sale at my local Best Buy.
But do you have to be near it though? Cause is it Bluetooth to where you can't just track the way you can?
It is Bluetooth. So it relies on being able to connect to a phone, but you don't have to be near it yourself. Anybody, it relies on other people having tiles as well. So when somebody else walks by your tile, it will connect. So you can actually say that, hey, my bag is lost. There's a little thing in the app that says, this tile is lost. And the next time it shows up near somebody, then it'll notify you exactly where it was seen, and you can travel to it then.
But oh, that's only if they have the tile on their app.
Yeah, if they have a tile app on their phone. So the whole thing is reliant on it being a product that other people buy and use. But at least with Tile, part of the reason that I wanted to go with it was that it was in Best Buy. So I know that that's being handed out to a lot of people. And I've actually lost a bag and found it because I had my Tile app. Did you really? And was able to say, oh, it was lost. And it, sure enough, I got a notification about 10 minutes later that somebody was near it and showed right where it was. I was like, oh, I left it there. Dang.
Hey, you know, for, I think they're only, they're approximately like $25 each.
Yeah.
And so that's not a bad at all.
No.
And I'm glad to hear somebody actually does it and that you actually had that happen and it worked. Cause yeah. A lot of times I'll get ideas. And I'm like, yeah, I don't know if it's really going to work, but yeah.
No, cool. I think that they're great. And the main thing that I would say is just make sure if you get one that you're putting it somewhere that's not going to be found quickly. So, I mean, it's not something that people would necessarily think to look for if they steal a camera bag. But at the same time, I would rather have it somewhere that is a little bit more tucked away. So I have mine tucked away in what's not actually a pocket. It's just a little crease in the bag that I can kind of shove something down in there. And yeah, it's been great.
It's cool.
So we like to end each episode here just sharing about a destination of the week, a place we'd like to go to, as well as saying goodbye in another language. So Connor, we're going to put you on the spot, but I'm going to give you a few seconds here to think of your destination of the week and think of another language, which hopefully maybe you speak or can come up with something. But I'll go first. So my destination is, I think I've shared before that I'm a history teacher as well during the day. For middle school kids. And so I teach about Europe and I teach about Russia, and I get to use a lot of the pictures from my trips in my classroom, which I love. One place I've never been to that I have, you know, admired in movies and in the books and all is Moscow and Red Square and the Kremlin area. I just think it's so beautiful looking that I don't know when I'll ever go. However, it is on my list of places to want to go. Other places in Russia, I'm not sure that I have a desire to see, but to go to the Kremlin, that is my destination of the week.
That'd be cool. St. Petersburg would be all right, but the Kremlin for sure, Red Square, yeah, that would just be amazing to go visit. Do you have yours yet, Connor?
Yes, I have mine.
All right, we'll go ahead and let Connor go first.
Well, this was one that actually got tipped off because Brian was saying that he is a history teacher. And I was thinking, now what's a historical site I think would be pretty cool to go to? And I would love to travel to Verdun. It's pretty much cordoned off because there's still so many unexploded shells there, but it was a place that there was a gigantic battle during World War One. And apparently it was so blown up by shells that the whole landscape is just entirely alien and weird and pockmarked with a bunch of different spots. Looks like the moon with grass. And that's just something that I think could be really interesting to go and try and photograph when the light was good, to catch highlights and shadows with highlights and shadows over and over with all of these little hills and marks that were made by man. So that would be my location that I would like to go to, is Verdun.
And that's in France.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. I should probably say that part too.
Right? All right. Very good. Thank you. My destination of the week is Latvia. I'd be very interested in actually doing an itinerary that starts in Estonia and goes through Latvia. But the capital city of Riga is right on the Gulf of Riga. There's going to be lots of good stuff there. But just for some reason, those Baltic nations have really intrigued me for the last, I don't know, 5 to 10 years. And I have yet to get a chance to go there, but Latvia is where I would like to go to this week.
Very cool. Well, before we officially say goodbye, I just want to invite everybody, if you're not already on Facebook, joining us on the Latitude, the Travel Photography Podcast group that we have there, that's a great place to join. Right now we have, as of right the second, 577 members.
Ooh. Ooh. But, almost 600 and almost another 100 since our last recording.
That's right. That's right.
So that's pretty cool.
But it's great because everybody's posting down here about trips they have coming up and asking for advice. And other people are jumping in because some people live in those areas or some people have been recently. And so they're sharing and helping each other out. And if you are or have listened to any part of the Improved Photography Network, you've heard about just people helping each other and just how we love to do that. And so jump onto the Facebook group there and you can follow us or you can join us for all of our conversations. As far as social media goes, for us personally, on Instagram, you can find me at Brian McGuckin. That's where I'm at. Connor, what about you? Where are you for Instagram?
I have two. So there is Esteem Commercial. I think it's just Esteem Commercial, E-S-T-E-E-M. And then you can follow me personally at Connor Hibbs Photography. So C-O-N-N-O-R Hibbs Photography.
Right. And Brent, what about you?
I have a fairly inactive one, but it's one of those things I keep telling myself I should get back to it. It's a different, kind of a weird name. It's Kali Walla, K-A-L-I-W-A-L-L-A. That's me on Instagram.
Oh, right.
That fits with your name?
No, it's I had a cat named Kalahari back in the day. And so for some reason, I was inspired when I was creating my Instagram account. I was inspired for some reason by memories of my fluffy cat. Then Walla, well, I live in Walla Walla. So that's where that comes from. One thing before we totally sign off and say our goodbyes in a different language that I wanted to squeeze in here was an announcement for a workshop of my own and a free meetup. So my free meetup is happening in Miami, South Beach. That is June 7. We're going to meet in the evening. I think I said 6:30. So look in the Facebook group if for some reason I need to update that, in the future podcasts. But 6:30, we'll meet at South Beach and then maybe walk on north and get some of the lights as the sun sets. But it's just a free meetup. There's nothing big about it. I'm there for a conference and I figured I'd like to take a look at some things with some listeners. So that's Wednesday, June 7 is when I'm planning on that. And then I've got a paid workshop. It competes with Connor's weekend. It is August 18. That is a Friday. And so I have a morning session and an afternoon session at the Chicago Botanic Garden. Take a look at improvephotography.com/workshops and you'll see the link to that, to my item there. Would love to see some people coming out for that. So thank you.
I'll say if you're torn between the two of ours, I will forgive you for going to Brent's.
Oh, thanks, Connor. That's
entirely reasonable and sounds like it would be a really fun time.
Probably we are not bit closer.
A little bit closer, being that's in Chicago. We are not doing portraits though. So if you love your portraits, just certainly head on over to Connor's. We're going to be focusing on a lot of different things that the Botanic Gardens has. Everything from macro to landscapes to waterfalls. Just there is so much variety there. It's amazing. So we're going to spend 4 hours in the morning, and then I have an afternoon session as well, about 4 hours or so in the afternoon. And if you want to do both, that'd be awesome. So hang out with me during the noon hour when it's really hot. But anyway, that's what we're looking at.
All right. Well, as they would say in Russian, since that is the topic or the destination that I picked, at least as an American that doesn't know how to say it would say, I believe you say goodbye as like prochay, something similar to that. So prochay.
For me, goodbye in Latvian is not something that I can pronounce. So I'm going to go to Catalan, the language Catalan, and that is adieu.
And I am going to go to Sweden because that seems to be the theme of Connor talk today and awesome. Say, hey, though.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us, listeners, and we'll look forward to being with you next time.